Hello, and welcome to Tennis Stories. I'm your host, Denisha Boston Hill, of the NJTL Strategic Partnerships and Events at USTA Eastern. So everyone has a tennis story. And on this podcast, we're interviewing some interesting folks in our USTA section, that's New York, New Jersey, and parts of Connecticut, to hear what it is about this sport that takes us from enjoying it as a hobby to an all-out obsession. My guest today is Aki Wolfson, USPTA wheelchair tennis professional who has taught at the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center for over 25 years and has served as the tournament director of the Jana Honsanker Memorial Wheelchair Tennis Tournament, a role she held for over 20 years, and I can't even believe it. Aki is currently the tennis director under Common Point Queens at Alley Pond, where Common Point is a nonprofit organization where its mission is to sustain and enhance the quality of family and individual life for all members and the community, regardless of religion, ethnic, or cultural background, national origin, gender identity or expression, age, and disability, with an inclusive environment that facilitates growth, meets individual needs, and builds community. Aki, thank you so much for sitting down with us today. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Denisha. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here speaking to you.
Well, let's just start with your personal tennis story. When did you first pick up a racket, Aki? You only look like 20 yourself.
Oh, please. Thank you so much. Let's see. I picked up a tennis racket at a tender age of 11. A little bit of sarcasm there. I know 11 is considered old in the tennis world. The reason for that is I have an older brother and there are many years between us. And I idolized him and he adored me. So I was his constant shadow. I'd follow him around everywhere. And when he hung out with his friends to play sports, I'd always tag along. And his friends didn't mind because I was kind of their personal ball girl. So when they played basketball, I'd watch in awe, watch them play. And then whenever the balls went out of bounds, I'd go and retrieve it for them. And I didn't care because I felt like I was part of the gang. You know, it was great. So then watching them play, I kind of got interested in playing basketball. So you can imagine like a 9-year-old trying to hold this heavy, heavy ball, which to us is like a bowling ball. That's how heavy it felt. And then looking up at the rim, even though back then it was really high up, a mile high in the air. I mean, even now today, it's still pretty high up for me. But I was trying to toss the ball into the rim and to no avail, I was never able to even touch the rope part of the rim. So I thought to myself, you know, basketball's not for me. And then when my brother and his friends decided to pick up tennis, again, I tag along. And again, I was their personal ball girl. There was a tennis racket laying on the side. So I picked it up and I went to a nearby handball court and started playing tennis against the wall. And I had pretty good hand-eye coordination, so I loved it a lot, and I would play hours and hours against the wall. My brother, being also interested in tennis, and he's always a self-taught player, so he would sift through the tennis magazines to figure out what's the best way to hit a forehand or what's the best way to hit a backhand. And then seeing how inspired I was with tennis, he started teaching me how to play. And we, the two of us, would hit against the wall for hours until it got too dark to play. My mother, who saw that I was so into it, decided to put me in a group lesson. And she put me in a beginner's class. And so my first group lesson, the coach was like, oh, my gosh, clearly your mom misplaced you because, you know, this is a beginner class. And she told me that you never played tennis on a tennis court before. And I said, I haven't. I've only hit against the wall. And he was like really impressed. And that's kind of when my tennis journey began.
That's awesome. And thank you to your brother for like inspiring you and helping you tag along, right?
Yeah.
And so now, years later, your specialty as a tennis professional is in wheelchair tennis. As an able-bodied person, who inspired you to develop professionally in the field of wheelchair tennis? I mean, that's, you know, you don't see that much.
No, you don't. Yeah. When I first started teaching at the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, I was teaching under the late Yana Hunsaker, who was a tennis director at the time. And she is a big advocate in growing wheelchair tennis. She would hold these weekly sessions and leading up to, at the end of the season, leading up to an annual wheelchair tennis tournament. I don't know exactly what she saw in me, but she thought I was a really good candidate to mentor and mold and for me to start teaching wheelchair tennis. So I would shadow her every week with her wheelchair classes, and I would help her out with the wheelchair tournament every year. And in between, she would send me to wheelchair tennis camps, and then I became certified. The year 2000, she had passed away, and that year the wheelchair tournament became ITF, and I took on the role as the tournament director and continued to teach wheelchair tennis on a weekly basis. Today, I'm at Common Point Queens at Alley Pond, and I have my weekly classes there. Right now, I'm working with a student who is playing for the U.S. Paralympic junior team. And now I have a five-year-old who joined my wheelchair family, and I'm hoping to inspire him so that he could also go into that road of competition down the road.
That's awesome. And now at the ETC, you conducted an amazing wheelchair workshop. It's not as easy as people would think.
Absolutely not. It's even if you have knowledge of tennis prior to it, being in a chair, and then, or if you have been in a chair most of your life and you know how to play sports, it's still, you know, putting the two together, it's very difficult. It's not very easy to do. And I had to get myself in a chair to see what it was like to be able to hit tennis. And let me tell you, my student could beat me easily in a chair.
And that's something I'm sure all students want to do, is to beat their coaches.
Of course.
And now you consider tennis not only a sport, but a drug that you would highly recommend. So to treat mental health issues, have you seen tennis be used to treat those who are struggling emotionally? And if so, please share with our audience, you know, your thoughts.
Denisha, did you read my article I had published during the pandemic?
I did not. So please tell me a little bit more about that.
So the title of my article was Tennis is Not Just a Sport, It's Medicine. Because I'm a firm believer that tennis is a form of a drug. Once you get hooked on it, you have that tennis fever, you just want to keep playing and playing and playing. And it's excellent, physical activity for you, as well as emotionally and mentally. It's stimulating. I'd like to share, there's so many people have crossed my path with stories of how tennis changed their lives. And two in particular come to mind that has hit home in my heart. One is of a young college student who aspired to be a really good, promising future in his tennis career. He had a tragic accident, ended up in a wheelchair, and had minimal use of his hands and legs. His coach at the time knew of my weekly wheelchair tennis classes and wanted to expose him to it because he just loved to play tennis. And she brought him out during the US Open one year and showed him wheelchair tennis in the tournament. She introduced me to him, and Denisha, his face was of anger, sadness. It was kind of more like a punishment to him to be brought out there watching the players play. than it was to open his eyes up to the possibilities of playing tennis again. So I basically told him, I said, look, whenever you're ready, my door is always open, come out to my classes and I'll have you playing tennis again. And it was about probably a year later, he came out, but he came out in a motorized chair. So wheelchair tennis could be played in a sports chair or a motorized chair. And look, there's Nick Taylor. He plays in a motorized chair. He's an 11-time Grand Slam doubles champion. So it's possible. And he came out to my court and he said, look, I'm right hand dominant, but I can't grip the racket. So can you teach me how to play lefty while I maneuver the chair with my right hand? So I said, okay, let's do that. Because, you know, two-handed players, if you are a two-handed player to begin with, you could play left-handed tennis. So we tried it. And then I thought to myself, I've had quad players play in my tournament. So I knew of them taping their racket to their dominant hand and playing in a manual chair. So I suggested that we try that with him. And he did so much better. He played every week, came out every week, and played in my annual tournament named after Jana Hunsaker in her memory at the time. There's different divisions in the tournament. There's an open division. There's an A, B, C, D division. D division is not, you don't get points for playing in tournament. It's kind of like get your feet wet into that competition state.
Okay.
And so he skipped the D division and went right into the C division. And he played really well. And his parents were elated. They said that was the first time they seen him smile since his accident.
Wow.
And he got that tennis fever and he continued to play week for week and played in tournaments and attained a very high ranking in the ITF division, the quad, for the quads. My other story is of a woman who was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And multiple sclerosis is a chronic and progressive disease that affects the nerves in the spinal cord in the brain. And when she was first diagnosed, she had said, thought to herself that her world was spiraling down and she didn't think she was an athlete all her life. So she didn't think she could ever be athletic again or do something because she was wheelchair bound.
Right.
Then she reached out to me. She says, hey, do you think you could teach me how to play tennis in a chair? I said, sure, come on out. And so she did. And she really, really pushed herself. She was just sweating. She was getting so much enjoyment out of playing. She's like, oh, I love this. I love this. And I also had her play in my tournament. She played in the D division because she was not a tennis player prior to ending up in a chair. So it was pretty hard to, like we talked about, it's pretty hard to teach someone how to play tennis and then how to teach them playing tennis in a chair. But she played in the tournament. I put her out in one of the stadiums during the tournament, and she had like a posse of supporters come out, friends and family, and it was just a joy to see. And they were not just rooting for her. They were rooting for every athlete who was out there. And she cried with joy, and she was just so happy. So she had the tennis fever, and that drug was instilled in her, so she continued to play tennis. So those are two of many stories I could share with you on how tennis is a drug.
Absolutely. I'm ready to get the fever. I hope everyone out there that's watching and listening, they also can appreciate, you know, their journey. It's not easy. And when your life changes, now you really want to do things that you've been traditionally, activities you traditionally participated in. And now it's just like, now it just sets in like, okay, life is truly, it's truly different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think regardless, it is just once you get that feeling of wanting to go out and play and just have to go out, just need to go out and play. It's just great for the body and definitely positive for the mental and emotional part of yourself.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned the different divisions. Let's go to the pro track for a moment. How have you seen the wheelchair pro tournament change over the years?
It's growing. When I first started teaching wheelchair tennis with Yana, in our classes alone, we had a handful of players. And then at the end of the year, she would have those wheelchair tournament. I think we had about 25 players come out to compete. And since when it became ITF, it went from 25 to 85. So it grew exponentially. Yeah. So we had a lot of players come out all over the world from Australia, Japan, to compete in a tournament. So it's not just wheelchair tennis. I think it's wheelchair sports in general. It's growing rapidly. You have wheelchair basketball, softball, sled hockey, track, and even rugby, which I find it to be quite violent. But I think wheelchair sports on a professional level is definitely booming.
Absolutely. And so this episode is being released during Women's Health History Month. And one of our goals of this podcast is to interview people from communities we're celebrating during the D&I Heritage Month. A big strategic goal of the USTA is to get more women into coaching. What has been your experience being a woman in coaching?
So I think there's an abundance of ups and downs associated with being a woman, especially in the sports industry in general. Mm-hmm. Whether you're a Serena Williams or a junior player or a coach, I think gender discrimination has been an issue. I myself never thought that I was discriminated because I was a woman. If a client had to choose between myself or a male coach and went with a male coach, maybe I was naive back then, but I didn't take it as because I was a woman. I took it as, well, that's your loss if that's who you want to be with. Today, and as a coach, I'm always thinking to improve the player to reach his or her next level of play in tennis. I think today more and more people are open to taking lessons with a female coach. I think people are starting to realize that gender has nothing to do with the ability of coaching, that it stems from the individual. There are bad apples and there are good apples. And I don't think gender is the reason for that, right? I believe working as a woman in a tennis field has allowed me to gain connections with most powerful, inspirational women. Billie Jean King and Serena Williams are two of many who have inspired me. But for me, when I first started teaching tennis, the person I looked up to was Jana Hunsaker. She was the epitome of being charismatic and powerful, and yet she was very humble. She cared a lot about people, wanted to help them any way she can. And I think I am who I am today as a woman coach because of her.
And now in that same vein, you know, so many people keep tennis as a hobby. What was your deciding factor going into a career of tennis, you know, instead of just keeping it as a hobby as so many do?
So my father was a cardiac surgeon, and he used to work in Japan for most of the year, and he would come to the States and spend time with his family for the remaining part of the year. Before I was born, my mother used to tell me stories of how he would never, ever turn a patient away. They would come knocking at his door and seeking help, and he would always, always help them without accepting any money for his services. And my mother used to complain all the time, like, God, you're the poorest doctor around. It's in my blood. I think because he always wanted to help people, I think I always wanted to help people. And maybe I'm considered like the tennis doctor because I just want to see my clients improve. I want to do anything I can in my power to study how they play and to, okay, this is what I'm going to do next in my lessons and help them improve and gain that next step in their tennis, you know, in their tennis life. I guess I'm that tennis doctor that would administer that drug so that they gain that tennis fever and play tennis for a sport for a life.
That's awesome. And kudos to you, your family, for just giving back, you know, because so many people need help and they don't even realize it. And so what do you think about the rise of racket sports over the past three years?
I don't know. I don't think tennis people want to hear this, but pickleball is big on the rise as a racket sport. And I don't know if the pandemic had anything to do with it because it's so easy to just go practically anywhere. I mean, you see them playing pickleball in the playground area. All you need is a pop-up racket and chalk or tape to put down the lines for the boundaries, right? And the pickleball racket, you never worry about strings going bad or you're breaking the, popping the strings and can't play, and or the tennis ball going bad. So pickleball doesn't go bad, right? So it's a sport that you could play for a life, and it's fun, it's easy, it's social. Look, my daughter had her first pickleball experience at our school because now they're introducing it to the PE classes at school. I'm not saying that tennis is not on the rise. I definitely see tennis on the rise as well. But I just think that pickleball just like boomed since the pandemic. Racket sports in general, I think, are on the rise all around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, not that we want to be in competition because we were here first. However, you know, red ball is really something that we're introducing to the world because like pickleball, we can pop up a net. It's a softball. Yeah. And our team at the USTA Eastern Division is really pushing red ball and trying to introduce that to so many people because they don't realize, they don't know what they don't know. They hear this, you know, pickleball phenomena, and, you know, phenomena's come and go. But red ball and tennis is just here to stay. And so how often do you get a chance to play tennis?
I don't play myself, at least not on a competitive level.
Okay.
I get my hits in with my individual clients that keep me in shape and my tennis game in check. I just get all my tennis in with my individual clients. So I don't really play all that myself.
Right. You have no free time, I'm sure, Aki. When did you have time to play? Now, do you keep any good luck charms in your bag, you know, now or when you were playing competitively? Or have you seen any players that are just like, they have the fever and they have all these like little nuances. They must put on, you know, orange socks or a green sock. Like, is there anything you've seen out there?
Well, for me, I can't think of any lucky charm that I put in my bag, but when I used to play tennis, and I guess this is everybody across the board, but I used to sweat a lot and the sweat would just drip down in my face and sting my eyes. So my brother at the time got me one of those headbands, the ones that John McEnroe wear across the head. And I looked at myself in the mirror. I'm like, oh my gosh, I look a little dorky. I didn't like it. And my mother, being the creative woman that she was, she would hand make my headbands. And those are the ones that you tie across your head and tie in the back. And on top of that, she would hand make my tennis skirts. So I always had a matching headband with a matching tennis skirt. And that's what I guess that's kind of like my lucky charm whenever I hit the courts.
Well, we know, I mean, it's Women's History Month, so we have to be in fashion, right? Full fashion when we hit the court. And so what would you say is your tennis mantra?
Oh, well, I tennis mantra. I guess play tennis. It's the best drug that you could have. It's a sport of a lifetime. I've seen so many older people play tennis in their late 80s, hitting the courts 3 or 4 times a week. And I think that's unbelievable. Although I see now I'm starting to see a lot of the older crowds playing pickleball because it is a lot easier, a lot better court coverage and easier on the legs. But yeah, tennis, take tennis. It's a sport of a lifetime. That's my mantra.
Now, who's on your route, Rushmore of tennis? I'm hearing Jane, Serena, anyone, and Yana, but anyone else?
Jimmy Connors. He has been, he's my Mount Rushmore because his style of play, he's so charismatic out there. He gets the crowd engaged. It's almost like a rock concert. It's like going to a rock concert when you see him play because it's just so, your adrenaline gets going and you're watching his play and he gives it 110% on the court. I remember this one match that I will never forget. It was against Aaron Krikstein. And I think it was definitely a 5-setter and it lasted about 5 hours, I think. And he wasn't a spring chicken at the time, you know, but he played like he was in his 20s. He fought, got the crowd engaged. And that was my most memorable match of him. On the women's side, I love Steffi Graf. I think she's so calm and cool and collected on the tennis court, and she's just so elegant to watch. And between the two of them, even though they're on different spectrums of how they present themselves on the court, they're just both my most memorable people that I enjoyed watching play.
Thank you. Aki, on behalf of the USTA Eastern Section, I want to thank you for sharing your tennis stories with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Tune in to hear our next tennis story, where we'll be interviewing current president of the oldest African-American sports organization in the United States, the American Tennis Association's Roxana Aaron. Thank you for tuning in.